What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 55, Breakfast with Brett, for September 25th, 2013. Our guest this week is Brett Singer, registered dietitian for Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Institute. He's been a registered dietitian with, I think, Memorial Hermann for 3 years. Is that right, Brett?
That's right.
All right. So, of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Right beside me is...
Michelle.
Marlin.
Laura.
Lorena.
Alexis.
Edith over there listening to the Ustream. Then we have our guest, Brett.
Alejandra.
Marissa.
Aisha.
George.
Zulima's taking pictures, and Brianna's in the back, and then is there somebody over there? I don't know. We may have some more students somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, so if you would like to join the conversation, you can call in on Skype, PHS Trainers. You can call us in there, and then Laura could enter that and put you in. You can check it out on todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast, or if you're listening live on Ustream, you can chat there in the social feature or the chat feature, and Lorena will see that and read your comments or answer your comments there. So if you'd like to join in there, there's plenty of ways to comment and then ask questions of Brett or of us. All right, so we're going to start off with normal warm-up, but this one is a little bit more important since it's kind of part of the entire talk. Breakfast. So this morning I had a sausage, cheese, egg croissant sandwich that you heat up in the microwave and a glass of chocolate milk. So that was my breakfast. Michelle?
Today I had cereal and orange juice.
Cereal and orange juice? What kind of cereal? You don't know?
Wasn't it Trix or was it Lucky Charms? I seen you eating it. That's why.
All right, so cereal and orange juice, not bad. Marlon?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing at all. So you've had nothing to eat since last night.
Yeah.
Nice. Laura? Make sure you talk to the front of the microphone.
I had a quarter of a Pop-Tart.
Like quarter of a Pop-Tart.
Yeah. Quarter?
A glass of milk or anything else with it?
No.
All right, Lorena?
Kolaches and a chocolate milk.
All right, what kind of kolache? You have to talk into the microphone.
Oh, sausage, cheese.
That'll work. Sausage, cheese, kolaches. Alex?
I went to McDonald's and I got the breakfast platter.
Oh. Nice, with the pancakes and sausage.
But I don't like the pancakes.
What?
That's my favorite part.
The way he said it.
That's the reason I get that thing is for the pancakes.
And then I ate my eggs with like syrup. That's like the only way I'll eat my eggs. But yeah.
Me too.
Like no drink. Because they forgot to give me my drink and we were in a rush to school and I was already late. So.
That's all right. That's a good breakfast. Edith, did you eat anything for breakfast? Did you eat anything for breakfast? No? All right, can you hear me on there? It's just delayed because you're listening live. All right. All right, Brett.
I had my standard breakfast is oatmeal and an omelet every morning with water.
Oatmeal and an omelet. Yes. All right, so you'll have to move up to the mic just a little bit, and you should be able to hear in your headphones what you sound like. All right, what kind of omelet?
I do an egg white omelet. And I really don't put much in it. I put a little bit of cheese in there and maybe like I cook a slice of turkey on the skillet and then I just throw that in there. So it's not much of an omelet.
Sounds so good.
All right, so I see you have a wedding ring on. You're married?
Yeah. Yes.
How long have you been married?
I have been married for 2 years now, almost 3 years.
Uh-huh. Very cool. Congratulations. Do you normally cook that omelet?
I do.
Or is your wife?
No, that's my role. I cook. She makes cereal for morning for breakfast. That's her favorite thing. She has cereal for breakfast. She loves cereal for dinner. For me, I like omelets. That's my thing, and oatmeal. So a little bit of carbohydrates from the oatmeal, and then always an omelet in the morning. Something I have to have eggs in the morning.
So gotcha.
Sometimes an egg sandwich though. I'll do an egg sandwich too. Do it on a bagel.
Nice. How about you? I love, like, if I toast some bread and then put, because I usually, if I make eggs, I'll put bell peppers and onions and mushrooms and all that other stuff, and like lunch meat and cheese, throw all that stuff in the eggs and scramble it. It's kind of, I guess it's like a lazy way to make an omelet and then put that on a sandwich. That's like my favorite. I love a good breakfast sandwich like that. So, all right, we'll continue around the horn and we'll come back to Brett some more. Ali?
Pancakes and a brownie and... some chocolate thing. I don't know.
Pancakes,
brownies. She's always eating chocolate.
All right, but then, you ate something. What about juice, milk, anything?
A Coke.
All right, Marissa.
I haven't eaten anything.
Anything. So nothing since dinner?
No.
A glass of water?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Want some gum?
Well, I mean, last night I just ate a piece of chicken and a little bit of rice. That's it. And I haven't
what
eaten.
What time?
It was like maybe 8, 9.
So for about 12 hours you haven't had anything. Water, gum, anything?
Well, I'm chewing gum right now, but
wow,
I haven't eaten anything.
You finna eat.
Do what? The mic. Edith, can you hear? You can hear? So I think it's you. Try and turn it up in, over there. All right, so Brianna's checking the sound quality, and so that we can have a good, make sure that we're streaming live well, so we're kind of checking in-house instead of figuring out after the end of the show. So she told me that there was something going wrong over there, but we have another person streaming. So Edith's over there listening also. Hopefully she's commenting in the chat room, you know, creating some chatter. So that was pardon the interruption. Aisha?
I have pancakes and orange juice.
Pancakes and orange juice. Nice. Here
at
the school.
I didn't drink coffee this time.
Nice.
You didn't die? I didn't die this time.
No heart attack.
Yeah. So I had a all right breakfast. I'm still hungry, though, because, you know, I can eat.
All right. George?
I had nothing.
Nothing?
Nope.
What'd you eat for dinner?
Nothing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What did you eat for lunch?
Two tacos.
So since about 24 hours, probably, almost, you've had nothing to eat?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, look how skinny he is.
Well, no, that's unhealthy. It actually does the opposite. It makes your body feel like it's starving, and then it stores more fat if you don't eat.
I don't know, then I need to eat.
But you got to make healthy choices, yeah, and hopefully Brett will talk some more about that in a second here. All right, so Brett, this is probably pretty typical for breakfast here. High school students, we got, I don't know, 10 or 12 students here. What's your just, I don't know, 2-second take on what they're eating for breakfast?
It sounds like a lot of pancakes.
That's what they had today.
So was that with school breakfast?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because everyone was either pancakes or nothing. So breakfast is huge. You got to have something. It helps a lot. It helps with schoolwork. It helps with, you know, maintaining a healthy weight. Provides a lot of nutrients. There's a lot of reasons to have breakfast. So it seems like it'd be better to have something than nothing. So if you can do breakfast here, then that's great. If you can't, if you have to do something at home, then even just a slice of toast would be helpful.
Okay.
That's my, I guess, 15-second take on
that,
on
that
your
org,
breakfast.
That's exactly what I want to know. Because I always say something is bad. Even if it's as bad as it is, even if it's the only thing you can have is hot Cheetos and a Coke, is better than absolutely nothing. I mean, that's pretty terrible. But, you know, a 1 out of 100 is better than a 0 out of 100. So, do you agree?
I would say if you can do anything other than Cheetos and a Coke, then go for that. But, have something for breakfast. It leads to better decisions later on, typically.
All right, so the better decisions in your food, and then also, you know, like you said, as far as mental processing, stuff like that. So, all right, Alex was absent yesterday, so I'm not sure. Are you ready for all this, Alex?
I'll try.
You scroll down past it, Alex. Oh. There you go. You're red, remember?
Right. Can you define dietitian and nutritionist for us?
Yes. Okay. So with the nutritionist, this is a question I get a lot. And people, even when I worked in the hospital, people would call me nutritionist all the time. So what a nutritionist is anyone can be a nutritionist. So any of you right now could call yourself a nutritionist, and you could open up your own business if you wanted to and call yourself a nutritionist. So you don't have to have any educational background in nutrition. Anyone can deem themselves a nutritionist. So what makes a registered dietitian means that I have a degree in nutrition that I've had to complete 1,200 hours of supervised practice, which basically means I had to intern in a variety of locations for about 1,200 hours. And that number keeps having to go up. So now it's 1,500, I think, for students. And then after I finish all that, then I have to take an exam, basically, that covers everything that I've learned and basically show that I know what I'm doing, and then I can become a registered dietitian. And on top of that, to maintain that status, every 5 years we have to do something called CEUs, which are continuing education hours. So I have to do 75 hours of continuing education every five-year cycle to maintain that status, which means going to lectures or reading books or whatever it may be. There's different things that you can do to accumulate those hours. So that's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. So be wary if you're learning from a nutritionist. They may have a background in it, but they also might not. You never know.
All right, so how long did it take you to get 1,200 hours of intern?
So the way I did it, there's different ways you can do it. Some people will graduate first, and then they'll do their internship hours, and usually that takes about a year or so. Or some people will do it during their master's. In my case, I was fortunate that my school had a program where you could do 2 years. Well, you did your four-year degree, but during the last 2 years of the degree, I was taking classes 3 days a week, but also working 3 days a week. So it took 2 years of interning during my undergrad. So it was pretty busy. It was 20 hours a week every week while going to college classes at the same time. And it was not paid. No.
Oh.
Nice. So usually if they graduate, then they get a job, and that's part of their internship?
Yeah, then that becomes more challenging. So I was fortunate that you had the undergrad process the way it worked out for me, because I didn't have to worry about anything. It was all go to class. My professors would set up the internships. I'd go to wherever I was told to work, and that was, you know, I had a lot of work to do and a lot of projects, but I didn't have to worry about that. The people that graduate first and then do their internship later, that's more challenging because you don't necessarily know where you're going. You have to, almost like med school or residency, you have to apply for it, and then you have to kind of be matched up with a different internship program. So it's not as easy as just looking online and finding an internship. You have to set up with a program itself and then get matched up. So, you know, I have interns at my hospital or my former employer, I guess, that they have interns from Washington, or we had some from Oregon. We had some from all over the country because they were matched up here in Houston. So it can be tough.
Gotcha. That'll work.
Can you give us a little background? Where are you from, or how did you get where you are today?
Okay, so I'm from Houston. I went to Klein High School, actually, and I played soccer at Klein High School. And when I was...
All right, so real quick, how far is Klein High School from right here?
I'd say 45 minutes to an hour. If you take Hardy Toll Road, then it's...
We have the G-Hats workshop is at Klein High School this year, and so some of the students were asking me. Sorry, continue. Okay. You're at Klein High School, play soccer.
So I was really, really skinny when I was a sophomore in high school, and so I really wanted to gain weight. So I tried to read as much as I could, and so I read all the magazines, the internet, all the stuff that a lot of high school kids are doing now, I'm sure. And so I got interested in that. And then when I finally got to school, I went to TCU up in Fort Worth. I got interested in it. I took some classes. I liked it a lot. And eventually decided to major in that, and then got my degree. And before I started in sports nutrition, I worked in the hospital setting. So that was cool because it's a variety of everything there.
So you worked as a sports nutrition in the hospital?
No, I worked as a general clinical dietitian, which means you're working more inpatient setting with sick people. So I worked with cancer patients. I worked with trauma patients. Cardiovascular surgery, they have completely different needs, but it gives you the background of everything. So you get a chance to learn how to do presentations, kind of not like this, but similar to this. You learn how to work in food service. You learn about how that works. You learn how to talk to doctors and how to, you know, provide your case. You learn a lot about electrolytes, kind of everything. So it gives you a big picture. That's where I wanted to start off with, but always with the goal to eventually transition to sports, and that's what I've done recently.
So working with, you said, the oncology, the people with cancer, because they have to modify their diet depending on their medicine and treatment, and so that was one of the things that you kind of had to do?
Yeah, it was a variety. So the question that a lot of people have is, well, so you're a dietitian, so you must ask people or teach people how to lose weight. That's the only thing I do. And in actuality, if you think about it, if you think about someone with a head trauma, or if you think of someone with with cancer, I'm not likely telling them to lose weight or telling them how to lose weight. More so with cancer, it's they're very sick. they're getting chemotherapy or radiation. And so if that's the case, then we have to find a way to get them to maintain or hold on to their weight. Because if they don't, then they're likely to not really be able to go through with the treatment. So I'd find ways to help them eat based on their symptoms. If they were having, you know, nausea, or if they were having vomiting, or, you know, difficulty swallowing. And then if it got too bad that to where they couldn't eat, then we would do something called tube feedings, or we would do TPN, which is basically intravenous nutrition. So if that's the case, then I would control that.
Wow.
So good background and everything.
Yeah, it's pretty. So we obviously have friends that have been affected by cancer, and you know, I haven't really talked to them much about the way the nutrition changes, mm-hmm. but one of our friends at church has esophageal cancer, and he's had it two or three times, and so obviously with the esophagus,
right,
it is big time, because everything goes through the esophagus if you're going to eat it. And so I'm going to ask him about that next time I get a chance.
Correct. So then tends to be, esophageal cancer is coming up a lot more often now, because it's related to acid reflux, or it can be, you know, acid reflux can be a triggering factor for esophageal cancer. And the problem with that is people are getting acid reflux a lot more often now, just based on our diet and how it works. And so because of that, you're getting these people that are coming in, they're afraid to go to the doctor, so they don't. They have this mass in their esophagus, and by the time they get to the hospital, it's typically an issue to where they can't swallow. So then the problem comes, can we put a tube feeding in them? Well, with the tube feeding, it's supposed to go through the nose and down through the mouth, well, and through the esophagus. So if they have a mass there and you can't get it past that, then we have to do something else. So we have tube feedings that'll go into the stomach or the intestine, but if we can't do a surgery then, if we can't provide that procedure for whatever reason, maybe their platelets are too low or something along those lines, if they have an IV, then that's when we would give something, not IV fluids, but we give nutrition through an IV. So it's kind of a challenge. You always start with eating first in oncology, and then if it doesn't work, then you have to go to the next step. It's never the goal. You never want to do that, but if it has to, then they have to be fed one way or the other.
Gotcha. I didn't figure we would get into all that learning while we were here.
Can you give us some facts about breakfast, and how does it affect our health?
Okay, so if you do, just going to Google, you can find 1,000 little articles or factoids on how breakfast works, because there's a big push in the country, especially in the government, to provide these, you know, school breakfasts and things like that, because we know that breakfast helps out so much. So some of the things that we see is that people that eat breakfast tend to actually have a more normal body weight. So a normal BMI is what we would call that. Also, and this makes sense, but if you're having breakfast, then you're more likely to get all the nutrients that you need, and that just makes sense because you're having more food on a daily basis. Kids that have breakfast are typically less tardy. They have less or make better grades in math and science. They tend to have less discipline problems. So they've done studies on all of these sorts of things on kids who have breakfast versus kids who don't. And what we wind up seeing is that kids who have breakfast, even if it's something just a little bit, we wind up seeing a much better impact on a lot of different things: grades, health, weight status, risk factors for other issues as far as health. So
do they account for kids that are like Alex, tardy because they're getting breakfast?
Yeah, I would say at least you got something to eat this morning. So
syrup and eggs. All right, so you have any more questions about those specific things you talked about? Discipline problems?
I have a question. It doesn't have to do with discipline, though.
Uh-huh. All right, no, go ahead.
What if you're trying to, like, gain weight, but, like, let's say I was, like, really, really skinny and I was trying to gain weight, and I eat a lot, but I don't gain weight? Like, a lot.
You have a metabolism. Fast metabolism.
Yeah. I know,
you
but...
You have a fast metabolism. So usually what I say for that is right now what's happening, so are you losing weight or are you just holding on? You just
like I haven't gained or lost weight.
Okay. So usually what you want to say is, or the way it works is that the amount of calories that you take in are roughly equivalent or equal to the amount of calories that you're putting out right now, energy-wise. So you're expending energy about the same amount that you're taking in. So in other words, if you were to add another 250, 500 calories on top of what you're doing normally today, then over the course of time, you would start to put on a little bit of weight. So things that you could do is try and make sure that you're eating more frequently. So when you have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that's great. But also maybe you have a snack in your locker, you know, have something in between. Maybe, you know, after this would be a good time. Or even, you know, the 2 o'clock hour, something like that before you go home. And then afterwards, even an evening snack is beneficial. So frequent snacks, frequent eating. If you're just looking to add more calories, sometimes adding a little bit of healthy fat can be beneficial too if you're just trying to look to gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
So things like peanut butter, which I think we get into eventually, and things like olive oil or canola oil are healthy fats. You know, avocados are healthy fats, walnuts, almonds. Those are all ways to add a couple hundred calories and not very much volume or amount. So that's an easy way to gain weight.
All right, so we may talk about it later, I don't know, but you mentioned a snack between breakfast and lunch. Now, 90% of the time with these kids, a snack is going to be potato chips or hot Cheetos.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say snack, what do you mean?
Okay, so for me, a snack, now I'm not like everyone, but for me, a snack in the morning is typically yogurt and fruit in the yogurt. And you can even do Greek yogurt, which is a high-protein yogurt. Now, the problem with high school a lot of times is that, you know, you don't have a fridge to put your food in, as opposed to at work, a lot of people will have a fridge. So they have different things that you can do. If you have a cooler you can that fits in your locker, and that if that's legal in the school, then you can do that. I know there's these lunch bags that are called packet that you can freeze the night before, and so it stays cool, like at fridge temperature, and so you can store cold foods in there. But, you know, a handful of almonds, you know, in your backpack is an easy snack. That would be a healthy snack. You know, string cheese would be a healthy snack. A bit of fruit, you know, having a banana in your backpack, those are all different healthy options. Not necessarily Cheetos. If you're eating, you know, on occasion to have something that tastes good is great. You know, like snacky like that. But if you're getting something, try and make it that it has some sort of benefit for you. You know, obviously, hopefully it tastes good as well. But, you know, a banana actually has some value to it, or you know, yogurt or something like that has value to it, as opposed to Cheetos doesn't really have much.
All right, so string cheese, is that something that can be kept in their bag, or does it have to be kept cold?
It would need to be kept cold. That one would have to be kept cold. So it is a challenge, because I know it's not easy. I did not do that in high school. I didn't have, you know, I just brought a brown paper bag was all I brought. So, you know, different alternatives are definitely going to be fruit that's shelf stable. You know, meat wise, there's not a lot you can do as far as that. And dairy wise, there's not a lot you can do. But fruits, veggies, peanut butter, nuts, almonds, all that sort of stuff are all options. Even grains are all different things that you can do.
All right. So one of my favorite snacks is trail mix. And I think we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's something that's easy that you could keep the little, you know, Ziploc bag in your backpack, just trail mix, grab a small handful and eat that while you're sitting in class or while you're walking in the hallway. It'd be a great healthy snack, give you energy, and that way you're not filling up on hot Cheetos so that you're hungry again in 17 minutes. So that's a really good option. So, all right, Jackie is absent. So Marissa, are you going to choke to death over there while you're coughing? You sure you got this? All right.
What are going to be the best options for an athlete that eats free or reduced school lunches?
So for this, first and foremost is having something to eat. So I know the challenge now is that a lot of kids don't like what's provided for them. It's either, you know, it doesn't taste very good, or they don't think it tastes very good, or it's not what they would prefer to eat. So the first thing is at least having something. Because especially if you're practicing after school, you don't want to not have anything for lunch, because now, you know, you're kind of running on fumes by the time you exercise. So trying to make sure that you're getting at least a little bit of protein from it. So eating the meat, whatever it may be, trying to pick out a fruit that you actually like. And then if you can, if dairy is available with it, which I know it is, then having a bit of dairy, even if it's chocolate milk, that would be a beneficial option. But just look for whatever sounds most appealing to you and make it work however you can. is kind of my suggestion for the school lunches.
So again, going back to the something is better than nothing. Yeah. All right, so I guess you're not very well versed, or it's been a while since you had, you know, high school school lunch. Generally, they'll serve, I don't know, I see a lot of hamburgers or pizza, and they'll serve, usually they'll have like the entree, a vegetable and a fruit, or they'll have like the chicken nuggets and mashed potatoes and gravy.
Their pizza's so greasy.
We're not gonna badmouth that cafeteria here. So what we're saying is, given the general options, how do you think that affects fueling an athlete,
okay,
in particular?
You know, I would go with so things to think about is when you exercise or when you have a meal before exercising, the things that you don't want to happen. You don't want it to be sitting on your stomach. You don't want it to be heavy, right? Because if you're exercising and you feel sick to your stomach or with a really full stomach, you're not going to really run very well, and you're going to wind up losing your lunch on the field or on the court, and that's not ideal, so don't do that. The other factor is that you want it to be broken down. So you want that energy to be broken down and able to be used at that point in time. So in other words, you want to have everything digested by the time, you know, 3 o'clock rolls around and you're practicing. So if that's the case, really high fat, really greasy things slow down digestion a lot. So that means it sits in your stomach for a longer period of time. If it's sitting in your stomach for a longer period of time, obviously that makes it feel, you might feel sick to your stomach, but also you're not going to have the food completely broken down and the energy available that you consumed. And that kind of makes it pointless for you. So other words, avoid the really greasy stuff. So you mentioned pizzas or burgers. So if there's an alternative to that, you know, if there's a chicken sandwich that looks less greasy, or if there's a, you know, a turkey wrap or a turkey sandwich or something like that available, you know, I'd have to see what's actually available for the school lunches. And I know it's been a while since I've been there, and I always packed my lunch. So, but going for the less greasy options, going for the lighter things, picking a fruit out is always going to be beneficial, and picking some sort of grain out, avoiding the fried stuff, avoiding the French fries, avoiding the pizzas and that sort of stuff.
Hey, do they normally have like an applesauce or something like that? I think I've seen some.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think about applesauce?
I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if it's the, you know, sugar, non-sugar added, you know, just the plain applesauce. That's a healthy option. And especially even if you kept that and had that around, you know, 2-3 hours before practice, depending on what time your lunch hour is, you could save that for a snack later on, and that's fine. It's an appropriate snack, and it would be digested quickly for you to use.
And something that wouldn't have to stay cold.
No.
So, all right. Okay. I think we'll move forward a little bit.
Okay. How do you feel about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for athletes?
Okay, so a lot of coaches, high school coaches, are pretty old school, and I think a lot of times I get with high school athletes, the comment is always, well, my coach just told me to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, so that's how I'm going to gain weight. So the reasoning behind that is that peanut butter is really, really high in fat, and it's pretty healthy fat as well. And so it's easy to snack on. Most kids like it. And so if you eat a lot of peanut butter and you eat a lot of fat, that's really high in calories, and so you're going to gain weight. The difference is, you know, what kind of weight are you trying to add? So peanut butter has some protein in it, but it also has a lot of fat. And so if all you're doing is snacking on peanut butter all day long, yes, you'll gain weight, but it's going to be a lot more fat. So it really depends on, are you trying to add lean body mass, like lean muscle mass, or are you just trying to gain weight itself? But I do like peanut butter and jellies. I have one. In fact, 8 a.m., 9 a.m. this morning before I came here, before I left to come here, I had peanut butter and banana and one peanut butter and jelly. So I have one every single day. So I do like it. I just don't think you need to necessarily have it all day long to gain weight. There's other alternatives.
Yeah, because they tell us, like, to eat peanut butter and jelly and eat a banana for cramps.
Yeah, they're coming up with a banana because of the potassium, but it's also going to be, you know, stretching. It's going to be fluids. It's going to be make sure you're training and getting acclimated to your exercise, so that way you're not cramping as much.
Is banana the only one that prevents you from having cramps?
No, I mean, no. In fact, bananas are not really even the highest in potassium either. So that kind of, you know, potatoes are higher in potassium, tomatoes are high in potassium. So those are all alternatives. Oranges, orange juice, those are all great for potassium. So no, with cramps, to avoid them, it's really hydrating all day throughout the day. So you don't want to wait until 30 minutes before practice starts to start, you know, drinking tons of fluid. You'd rather make sure that you're hydrated throughout the day and that you're hydrating during, you know, practice itself to help out with hydration or to help avoid the cramping.
So you can be like Brett and have a nice fancy water bottle carry on with you.
Yeah, there you go.
But they say that like pickles helps with cramps.
So this one, I get this question a lot, and it's tricky for me because I've read a couple different studies on this, and some will say pickle juice helps and others will say it doesn't. I don't like to do pickles or pickle juice, and the reason being for that is that so pickle juice is really, really high in sodium, and the purpose of having sodium, so you see sodium in sports drinks, and the reason why sodium is in sports drinks is because it helps with absorption of the fluids, so absorption of the water. So to give one more clinical example, when you go to the hospital, you get IV fluids. What an IV fluid is it's sodium and water, and the reason why they give the sodium is to help with the absorption. So pickles also have really high sodium, and pickle juice has extremely high sodium. The problem with that is it's so concentrated that sometimes it doesn't wind up providing the benefit that you're looking for. And then the other factor is, if you drink pickle juice and you wind up throwing up because it tastes so disgusting, then that it's completely counterproductive than what you were trying to do. So you're better off, in my opinion, hydrating throughout the day, and then sports drink during the, you know, leading up to practice or during practice is helpful because those will have sodium and they taste a lot better.
It would be better for you to drink like Gatorade during practice.
Correct.
More Gatorade than water.
Well, not a lot. Not necessarily, but you know, 20 ounces of Gatorade, 12 to 20 ounces of Gatorade an hour during a practice would be fine if it's a high intensity practice. You know, some people, let's say it's just a walkthrough, then no, you don't really need that. But if it's a high intensity practice where you're losing a lot of sweat and you're using a lot of energy, then yes, Gatorade would be a good option. But fluids as well, so water on top of that.
So, Jackson, I think we should move up to Gatorade for practice.
Yeah, we
should. Yeah.
We have a nice Gatorade banner back there behind Brett.
Yeah, every time I say that to high school, that seems to be the very next response from high school students is, well, we should have Gatorade.
We have Gatorade bottles, but just...
Right?
Yeah, we have water in them.
See, but then the problem is it's the people that aren't practicing drinking all the Gatorade. So it's the ones standing on the sidelines the whole time drinking the Gatorade instead of the water. Well, they're the ones that aren't needing the Gatorade,
right?
But the ones that are on the field the whole time aren't getting the Gatorade.
Yeah, I try and emphasize that. So, you know, when I played soccer in high school, I was on varsity my sophomore year. Well, I did not play at all. I was on the team, but I didn't play at all. I didn't need Gatorade when I was sitting on the bench my sophomore year. Now, varsity or senior year, when I started playing all the time, then that's helpful. But if you're just, you know, warming up and maybe playing 5-10 minutes. Then you don't really need it so much as someone who's playing full-time or at really high intensity. So same thing as a thing I'll see at the gym oftentimes is the person who's walking really, really slow on the treadmill for, you know, 30 minutes is just downing, you know, one or two Gatorades, which is now they're taking in more calories than they're actually even using. So you don't really need it for that.
All right, so by high intensity, you said about one bottle of Gatorade per hour of...
I like to say around intensity. 30 grams of carbs in an hour. And so if you look at 20 ounces of a sports drink, most of them are going to be around 30 grams of carbs. So that's usually my reference point. Now, you can have more fluid than that. So especially in hot temperatures, more like 32 ounces of fluid an hour would be good. So in other words, you would have maybe around 20 ounces of Gatorade and another 12 ounces of water or so. It doesn't have to be exactly that, but it can be beneficial.
All right. That's good. We have a game this weekend on Saturday. It's at 1 o'clock, our varsity football game. So I'm hoping the weather stays nice and cool, but at 1 o'clock it's going to be pretty intense on turf for football. So
on a Saturday?
Yeah, on Saturday.
I think it should be like 90-something.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, we'll figure that out whenever it gets, you know, to Saturday. But
it should be hydrating early. They should be... What they eat Friday night is going to be... is going to be important too, so you don't want to go out having pizza or fast food Friday night for a 1 p.m. game. That's probably not the best idea.
All right, so since they're not going to, the athletes aren't going to listen to me, what you guys need to do, since they're all your friends,
they're
is you need to tell
us.
They're going to call you wings and pizza.
What you need to do is say, hey, let's go eat a sandwich. Let's go eat a Jason's Deli and eat a sandwich.
Oh, that is.
I like Jason's Deli.
I know. Yeah. I like their broccoli and cheese soup.
So that you have to take the initiative. Say, hey, let's go here instead of going to Wings or instead of going to CC's and, you know, eating 74 slices of pizza. You've got to be the leader since they're probably not going to listen to me anyway. So.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do good at that one either.
We're going to be like, let's go to CC's.
All right. All right, so we talked briefly about trail mix.
Wait. Is it true coffee makes you shorter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Trying to think about
that. Coffee makes coffee. You
shorter. No, not that I know. I have not read that anywhere. I'm sorry. I've heard of
I'm
that.
I'm happy.
But I have not read that anywhere, no.
So I think what she meant is if you drink a lot of coffee, can it affect whether or not you grow?
Yeah.
And kids, I don't know. I honestly have no idea. I haven't read that in any of my, you know, any of my textbooks or classes or anything like that. I haven't read anything about related to caffeine. Zinc deficiency, which is not common here, but zinc deficiency can lead to dwarfism if you're a child, to where if you don't. But it's a more common issue in other countries, not ours. But so they will not. If they're zinc deficient as a child, then they won't ever actually grow out of the child's body. So it's kind of weird.
That is weird.
But no, I have not read anything about caffeine.
Do they put zinc in water like most? How do we normally get zinc then?
You're getting zinc from, I think, veggies. You're getting them from a lot of different green vegetables and maybe meats. I can't remember off the top of my head where zinc's coming from, but typically, it's more of an issue in the Middle East than it is here. So I'm not too terribly worried about it for people here.
All right, George, Google that while you're sitting here and then come up with an answer. So we'll move forward to some trail mix questions.
If you were to have trail mix for athletes to purchase, what should we put in it?
So usually with trail mix can be healthy, but it can add up really quickly because oftentimes what you'll see in a trail mix is you'll see dried fruit, which is typically pretty sugary. You will see, you know, chocolates or different things like that. You'll see a lot of nuts, and nuts are really high in fat. And it is healthy fat, but it's typically very high in fat. So it's an easy way to add a lot of calories. So you want to try and make sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck. So try and make sure that you're getting really healthy nuts in there. So you're doing almonds or walnuts, pistachios, maybe a little bit of peanuts, but you don't want to go picking out some of the other ones like pecans or Brazil nuts or things like that aren't quite as beneficial. You want to make sure that if you're going to provide chocolate in there, that's fine. But maybe aim for like dark chocolate, because dark chocolate, especially the one that's, I think it's like 75% or higher in dark cocoa, that has more antioxidants in it.
Isn't that good for your heart?
Yeah, dark chocolate's good for your heart. And so that would be a good option that you could add to it. And then, you know, I like maybe even some high fiber or like cereal or something like that would be something that you could add into there, as at least a little bit of carbohydrates or grains. And then if you want to add some dry fruit in there, maybe raisins or craisins or something like that, maybe that would be an option. Yeah.
What about like peanut butter and white chocolate?
Peanut butter and white chocolate, like into
the chips, the
peanut butter chips. Just general. Oh, peanut butter chips. Okay.
Peanut butter chocolate chips. I don't think, dark chocolate is going to be the one that's going to be more heart healthy. Now, you know, I don't like to say don't have something because, you know, I like to have sweet stuff too. So having something like that's fine, but it's not going to be really beneficial as far as overall health. But it's something, you know, good you can add a little bit to just to have something sweet.
Because my mom, she's like always eating trail mix and it has like the peanut butter and the white chocolate and just chocolate and grapes and green grapes. It's weird, and peanuts and almonds in it. And the thing is, she only eats the peanuts. She really doesn't like the chocolate or the peanut butter.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's the whole point?
Just adding flavor to it is all.
All right, so George has Googled and come up with a short list of where we get some of our zinc from, so he's going to hit us with that real quick.
So I got cooked oysters.
Yeah, seafood.
Or beef, lean cooked. Dark chocolate.
Ooh.
And peanuts, roasted peanuts.
Okay. See, yeah. So I don't think it's, for whatever reason, it's not typically an issue here. None of those foods are typically going to be foods that kids eat a lot of that I can think of, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they typically put like fluoride in the water when we drink it.
Yeah, I would assume there's going to be some in there, and then I assume they're getting it somehow, and I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. It's been a while since I've taken all my classes.
That's all right. Maybe George will keep Googling and find it. All right, George, the next thing you got to Google is what do they put in the water? Like, how can these...
What trace minerals are added to water?
There you go. What trace minerals are added to water? So George's going to look that up while we keep moving here. All right, so I'll go back and listen to it. But you said for trail mix, almonds are good. What other nuts?
I like almonds, walnuts, pistachios are different options. And then maybe a little bit of peanuts, but not too many. And then, like I said, dark chocolate and, you know, a little bit of dried fruit would be fine, too.
And then high-fiber cereal, like...
So, like, I, you know, for me, when I have yogurt or something like that, I'll have... like Fiber One cereal or, you know, Cheerios or Honey Nut Cheerios or something like that would be an option that you could do. And you could maybe throw that into a trail mix too. Because ultimately, if you're all you're doing is nuts and, you know, chocolate and dried fruit, you're not getting a whole lot of, you know, complex carbohydrates. You're getting mostly just sweet stuff and fat. Now, it is healthy, but, you know, I'd like to get, if you can add a little bit more benefit to it, then that'd be an option.
What about, like, granola?
Yeah, granola is a good option. But, again, granola is going to be typically higher in fat. So, same sort of thing. But it is a good option to add in there, especially for flavor.
What are some things you're doing in the clinic to help educate clients?
All right, so real quick, tell us about your work setting and then go from there. Where do you typically work?
Okay, so... right now, what I am working at, I work at a sports medicine facility. So what we have is we have physicians and we have physical therapists. So we have all sorts of patients that come in with sports injuries, and then they do their rehab there. But we also have what we call a human performance team, which is basically where we take athletes who have been injured or athletes who are trying to prevent injury or just trying to improve their performance, and we'll work with them on their diet. We have strength and conditioning coaches there, so they'll train them there as well. Or we have all sorts of, if you've ever seen a Gatorade like commercial where they're hooking people up to all this, you know, stuff on the, like masks and all that sort of stuff, we do a lot of that testing at our facility too. So we do all that there to try and help athletes improve their performance. So for me, I'll work with all sorts of different high school, college, work with some professional, some, you know, and then just some average Joe, you know, people that are just trying to exercise and get healthy. So I've worked with all sorts of different people. They'll come into my office. It's just a typical office. And usually what I'll do is I'll ask them all sorts of different questions to get a feel for what they're doing at home and what they're trying to accomplish. And then from there, I'll just basically give I'll type notes out for them, and I'll really kind of have a conversation like we are right now for an hour or two, and I'll give all sorts of information from that. But we also have handouts that we create and things along those lines to help pass on information. But most of it's just done by word of mouth based on what their goals or objectives are. And then from there, usually what I'll do is I'll ask them to kind of email me back and forth for the next couple of weeks and see how things are progressing and see if things are going the way they want them to. So we'll kind of have back and forth conversation. But it's a lot of what it is right now. So, you know, people will have something in their mind, a question, and I'll answer it, and we'll kind of start the dialogue from that.
All right, so essentially what we're doing here, but with a good bit more detail.
Yeah, and it's more individual based, so it's whatever they want. So yesterday I had a bodybuilder, and he was trying to put on more lean mass, but also he was trying to cut down, and so it was...
Listen up, Ali, he's talking to you.
So it was pretty much, you know, he was going over what he was eating on a day-to-day basis, and then I was making adjustments. So we have calculations that we use to determine what they need, and we have all sorts of tests that we can do to help us out on that. And then from there, I'll break down the information for them and give examples of how they would do that through their diet.
All
How can you find out if you're allergic to foods?
Ooh, this is a good question. So, you know, typically if you think, so one that we get a lot now is celiac disease. Everyone says they're gluten intolerant or they're gluten sensitive or they think they have celiac disease, but they've never actually been tested. They just think that whenever they eat grains, they feel, their stomach feels weird or something along those lines. You know, there's allergists that you can go and you can check with them, see that physician, and ultimately get it tested if you think every time you're eating something, it's causing an issue. But usually you want to try and pinpoint it. So if you feel like you've been sick or if you're having weird reactions to things, kind of keep a diet log and pay attention to what you're eating and kind of notice, am I feeling bad when I eat this food or not? And you can kind of narrow it down and try and determine what's causing the issue. If you remove that from your diet and you don't seem to have that issue anymore, then maybe it is something related to that food. But if you want to try and confirm it, then going to see your physician on that would be probably where I would recommend starting off.
So just a home study of keeping track of what you eat and then what makes you feel bad, like, if I eat shrimp, I can't breathe. Then, well, I write that down. I'm allergic to shrimp.
Right, right. Well, because what you'll get is you'll get a lot of celiac disease people or people that think they have celiac disease, and they'll say, I am allergic to gluten. And then you start questioning what they had for lunch, and it's going to be something along the lines of, oh, I had a sandwich. And now you realize, well, that has gluten in it, and you feel fine right now. So clearly you don't have a gluten allergy. So it really just depends. Trying to keep track of what you're doing and seeing if you really feel bad every time you have that food.
I'm lactose intolerant.
See, and so if that's the case, then you kind of know to avoid that.
Yeah.
But is it lactose intolerant? Is it with any time you have any sort of lactose?
Yeah.
Okay.
So no ice cream, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, so dairy. Is there dairy in yogurt?
There is.
Yeah.
So it's lactose, and then so any whoever's lactose intolerant, what that means is that they don't have the lactase enzyme, which is the enzyme that breaks down lactose. So in other words, you're not able to break down that disaccharide, and so what happens is you start to have stomach issues or discomfort with that. Some people can actually improve their tolerance with it. So sometimes what we'll say for people who are lactose intolerant is you can try and add a little bit at a time, and so maybe even like a teaspoon or half a teaspoon of dairy. And you can see how you handle it. And some people can build up that tolerance to it. Because what you'll see is a lot of people in Asia are lactose intolerant because they don't do a lot of dairy. And so there's a way that you can actually start to build up that lactase enzyme into working. But some people, it just does not work. So some people are lactose intolerant and you just have to avoid it completely and, you know, go for the lactate milk or different options like that that have the lactase enzyme already in it.
Gotcha.
What is gluten-free and should we be concerned with it?
Okay, so gluten-free, right now what it is I don't know why it's come up so much recently, but what you see with gluten-free is it's related to celiac disease. And so what gluten is it comes from wheat, rye, barley, and to an extent oats. Some people can handle oats and oats typically are fine, but the problem with it is that sometimes oats are made in a location where gluten is also made. So sometimes they get cross-contamination from that. And so what happens when you have gluten and you have gluten intolerance, when you have the gluten, it goes in and it damages what we call microvilli. And villi are in your intestines, and they help with the absorption of nutrients. And so if you're damaging intestinal villi repeatedly, then you're going to have a hard time absorbing the nutrients that you're trying to consume. So they'll typically feel really bad, really big digestive issues, similar to what lactose intolerant would feel like. So they really have to avoid that. But unless you're having, you know, consistent issues, stomach problems, discomfort every time you have some form of grains, I don't think you have to be too worried about it. I think a lot of people don't know what all gluten is or what all it's found in. And so typically people who are on a gluten-free diet and have to be on a gluten-free diet really have to be really have to monitor what goes into their food. I mean, they're constantly checking labels to make sure they're not getting any, because they start to really feel terrible when they consume it. And it's also, it's an issue with cross-contamination. So similar to if you were to cut meat and then cut fruit with that same knife that you used to cut the raw meat, then you could get cross-contamination from that. You could get bad bacteria from that. So same thing happens with gluten. So if you were to cut bread with, you know, a particular knife and then cut a piece of fruit with that same knife, a gluten-free diet, someone who needs to be on a gluten-free diet, if they consume that fruit, they would wind up getting the gluten from that cross-contamination, and they would have the issues or the stomach discomfort from that. So it's a real sensitive issue for those who have it.
All right, well, we have a great problem is we have probably, I don't know, 6 or 8 more questions, I don't know, but we only have 3 more minutes before these kids go to lunch, which they're all going to eat a healthy lunch, right? You're going to make healthy choices.
Sure.
You're going to make sure you're eating non.
Our lunch healthy? What?
I'm okay. Going for a salad today.
Salad?
Just because.
All right, so real quick, if somebody's getting a salad, Brett, last minute tip here. If they're getting a salad, what are they going for?
But they have, like, chicken in it. Like,
yeah. So salad's fine. Chicken. But if you're trying to gain weight, then is salad really... You know,
like,
you
get
You would, want to have something to go with the salad. So not necessarily pizza, but you could have fruit or, you know,
I always get pineapples or apple with it.
But with salad, you just want to make sure that you're not loading it with too much dressing. Having the dressing on the side can help prevent loading the salad with too much dressing. And then watching out for too much cheese or fried, you know, fried meat on the salad.
I hate cheese.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
All right. So did you catch all that? Did you catch this? Yeah. All right, so if you're trying to gain some weight there in your salad. All right, well, that is going to bring us to Alex. Alex, did you see right there? You were supposed to come up with a tip or word of wisdom, so you were supposed to come up with a summary of what he was saying. That's right, we'll go with the salad as his final tip there. All right, go ahead and hit up your last part. Go down to the red. There you go.
Of course, we have to mention the people who help support us. Pasadena Education Foundation grants with our sports medicine course and for this podcast equipment. And last but not least, Memorial Hermann for our guests and general support of sports medicine.
Right, so, like Brett said earlier, he works for Memorial Hermann, and Dr. Penny Wilson actually recommended that we get in touch. So I think we had a great conversation. Brett, I want to thank you for coming out. You know, definitely if you want to share this with any of your people about what you're doing, or if this helps you get a promotion at some point, saying, you know, I'm being part of community good, you know, feel free to let me know if I can do anything else. If you want to check out our website, www.sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, you can watch live almost every Wednesday on Ustream and join in the conversation there, like we said earlier, or todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. Brett, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's going to be the best way?
Okay, so you can always email me. My email address is brett.singer@memorialherman.org. Or I know you're on Twitter. I am on Twitter as well. I just followed you actually today. So bsinger10, I think, is my Twitter handle. I don't tweet out that much, but I will retweet some stories on supplements or different things like that. So you can find me on there.
So... you guys, I know you're Twitter fanatics, so
follow
bsinger10. Or if you can't find it, then look at mine followers, and he should be towards the top there. All right, if you... oh, this is your part right here.
Okay. Follow us on Twitter, PHS Sports Med, and Google Plus PHS Athletic Training, and facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training, and our office phone, 7137-400310.
You forgot the extension.
The extension is 01312.
All right. So for Jeremy,
Michelle,
Marlin,
Laura,
Lorena,
Alec,
Alejandra,
Marissa,
Aisha,
George,
and the rest of the sports medicine crew, that's a wrap.